Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy connecting the light. My guest today is Susie Ward, who many of my listeners will already know is Matthew's mother, and he's possibly one of the best known channels for messages about spiritual matters and very topical matters such as we have in the world as we go through this particular period of time. So it is a great pleasure for me to welcome back Susie. Are you there?
I am. Hello, Mike, and thank you. It's good to be back with you.
I'm looking forward to it. Listeners, I will tell you, in case some of you are unaware of what our subject is, it's not about Matthew this time. It's about Susie and her relatively new book, which covers her conversations with animals. And that is mainly to do with dogs, because Susie and her husband, Bob, are very great dog lovers. But firstly, Susie, a couple of things before we get on to your book. It's Friday the 13th. Aren't you superstitious?
No, not the least. I hadn't even thought about that, Mike.
No. I have to think.
Are you? Are you
superstitious? No, not at all.
I didn't think so.
No, no. It has no place in my thinking. I don't know whether superstition is a substitute for true belief, but no, I can't see anything different with the number 13 to the 12.
I don't either, and I never have been superstitious. Maybe it's something, maybe like everything else that parents pass on to children, that is how some people do become rather embroiled in all sorts of superstitions and allow them to have influence in their thinking.
Yes, that's right. They possibly, the parents believe it, and as children we tend to respect what our parents believe or tell us. Now, the other matter I wanted to cover, because I think it's useful, with all this talk of swine flu and possibly other flus going around, you endorse something that I saw on the internet about the value of onions. Would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about that in case it's of interest? They may have people around them or in the family with flu.
I'm sorry, I missed the word, Mike, that you said, the value of what?
Onions.
Oh, onions. Onions. Yes. Excuse me, please. Well, I think that both onions and garlic probably have properties that do help us boost our immune system. I don't get sick. I'm not the best person to talk with, really, about remedies or preventive type foods or practices. But since we are sort of edging around this topic of what could be good for us, it's something that I have heard about recently. Bob and I have just started it. It is liquid oxygen.
Yes.
Our atmosphere is so polluted that none of us is getting enough oxygen, not just, to make breathing easier, but to oxygenate ourselves. And we're too new to this for me to comment very knowledgeably on whether it's going to make a great difference in how we feel. But I greatly respect the people who told me about it. And so anyway, we are doing that.
Right, yes. I have read about it before. I mean, I can't remember the details, I must admit. But I was quite impressed of the value of using that type of therapy, or perhaps it's even to prevent problems.
Now, exactly.
I can I'll just quickly say in passing, what I read about the onion is that by simply, I think, cutting one in half and having them in the rooms where the infection of flu exists, somehow the onion appears to attract it to itself, and it takes it in, and maybe it acts as some sort of preventative. But from what I read, I was quite impressed that such a simple thing could be introduced where the illness occurs, and it seems to have a very good effect.
You know, my feeling about that is that that information is sort of flowing. You know, I'm resonating with it. I think that there are a lot of what we call just legends or lore that we have heard, poultices and such, that our grandparents and great-grandparents used successfully. And then my feeling is that as we... the generations came along, and I guess we thought we were more progressive. We knew more science. You know, we rather lost sight of the effectiveness of what we consider. Well, that's old-fashioned type thing. So probably I would vote for onions. Just like I would vote for garlic.
Yes. I must say, I do like my onions fried.
Yes. I do too. Or on tomato and lettuce sandwich.
So. Oh, we're making each other feel hungry here. Yes, I think you're right. Our parents, or their parents even, had to find ways of dealing with illnesses or problems of the body or whatever, to find simple solutions. And I think over many years, people noted the things that helped or could actually cure problems. And you're quite right. I think when people generally think of them as old wise tales or being old fashioned. Anyway, we'll start now with your book and your great love and interest in dogs, but let me ask you a question. What are the most dogs that you've ever had at any time? Because I gather you've had quite a few on occasion.
We have. At one time we had 11 dogs, but that
Gosh.
Was just for several months. We were fostering four, and our personal four fur family were the seven dogs that we had prior to taking in those four foster kids. And then, of course, they remained afterwards.
Yes. It seems to me, reading your book, that rather than you find the dogs, often they seem to find you.
Well, yes. It does seem that way, Mike. Probably the... It would be more correct to say we are led to each other.
Yeah.
I don't think I have said that before. But at any rate, it's really just like people, kindred spirits meeting, linking up in one relationship or another. And when we say, well, you know, but what a coincidence. Well, I don't believe there are any coincidences. I think everything is a synchronous step in opportunities that are constantly being presented. And it's that way with our either directly meeting up with dogs or hearing about them and then bringing them into our family.
Yes, indeed.
We do not go to pet shops.
No. Right. One question I would like to ask that I didn't see any mention of in the book, although perhaps I did read it and forgot, is did your dogs at any time ever tell you what they thought of cats?
No.
Oh, what a shame.
And this is the first I've even thought about that. They may have had contact with cats in the years before they came into our family. But since there was no exposure to cats at all afterwards, maybe that is why they never mentioned cats.
Yes. Well, in life, we tend to think that it's cats versus the dogs in some way, and often owners of dogs bring them up to chase cats and sort of ward them off. And I wondered if the dogs themselves had anything, if you like, against cats. I can't think they do, but I just wondered if they ever told you about it.
No, they never did. And from what they have told me, I would say that kittens and puppies are not born as foes or with the instinct that they have to fight with each other, with one chasing and the I don't think that. I think that they are influenced by their experiences. And
yes.
I'm sure that there, in many families, there are both cats and dogs, and
yes.
they get along beautifully because they both receive love. They're treated, with respect, both of them. And they absorb the energy of the people in the family. And obviously those people love all the animals in their family. And just from what I have heard our dogs say, there is not an innate antipathy from one to the other.
Yes. I think at this point, perhaps it would be a good idea if you explained how you perceive or hear what the dogs say. What sort of contact do you have with them? Because I believe it's not normally verbal.
No, it's not. As I mentioned in the book, I don't consider myself an animal communicator because I have known a few true animal communicators, and their capacity for understanding is considerably more extensive than mine. In addition to hearing the animals' voices, in some cases, I feel their emotions. Now, some animal communicators and healers also can feel physical discomfort or outright pain in the animals that they're treating. I don't feel that, but I can feel emotions. And our animals who have transitioned, because they go to the very same spirit world we do, they send me pictures and they talk to me from there. Those are the three main areas where I feel that, I'm just so gratified by what I still consider gifts. But I do want to mention that we all have this very same capacity. It's just that it opens in some of us sooner than it does in others. But we all have it, just as we all have that capacity for telepathic communication with people.
Yes.
And I do hear the dogs' voices the same way the same way I'm hearing you now, Mike. The same way I hear Matthew.
Yes, amazing. But you said when you perhaps convey something to them, they don't always reply. That's a strange thing, isn't it?
Well, I just accept that those who consider me a stranger don't reply. In a conversation with animals, either those in our family or other animals whom I know, they reply. But I am so drawn to dogs that when I park beside a car and there's a dog sitting in the car, I just naturally look at it and say, "Hello, how are you?" And sometimes those dogs just look at me quizzically. Other times they just bark ferociously. But sometimes they do say, "Who are you?" Or, yeah, "Why are you speaking to me?" And I can understand that. You know, they don't know me. They're protecting their car.
Yeah.
So, but those really are the only times that, if I'm persistent, that animals don't respond.
Yes. What I do find amazing, really, is that you actually hear their voices in different tones as well.
I do. Different inflections. Just like we hear each other, Mike, with emphasis on some words, and they have their own speaking styles. And they have different interests, just as we do, different personalities. I think the primary thing that I wanted to convey in the book is that the extent of animals' abilities, their emotions, their intelligence, their awareness of our feelings. They also know our thoughts, because that's what telepathy is. Telepathic communication is a thought process from one consciousness to another. But even animal lovers, I think in most cases, cannot fully comprehend just how much animals know, the extent of their feelings, and how much response there is to us, especially in terms of picking up our energy, knowing our thoughts, understanding our words. In fact, as Brillo explained to me, this is how they how their vocabularies come about, is by the words that we use, either the words in our thoughts or what we say to them, what we say to each other. And this may be a good place to mention Big Dog. Or did you want to ask something about him?
Well, first,
I don't want to bring him in sooner than you may have.
Right.
Outline, yes. Mike.
Right. Since you mentioned Brillo, I just wanted to say that of all the ones in your book, I somehow find him to be my favourite. And you're mentioning about, I think, their vocabulary sort of growing. And I had to smile when you mentioned that he swore once.
Oh, well, he didn't exactly swear.
No, I know. But,
I would be happy to say that, because it's such a good example of how they learn from us.
Yes.
The situation was that it was about the same time of day that ordinarily Bob and I would be getting out the leashes to take our dogs for a walk. No, we have two fenced acres out in the country with lots of trees and undergrowth and boulders. It's an absolutely ideal place for dogs to play and explore. So they have all of that, but they do also love their walks. And at any rate, Bob and I were preparing for dinner guests, and we were running late with that. So I mentioned, you know, just the dogs were sort of circling, and I said, look, Daddy and I are too busy to take you for a walk today. And Brillo said, that's not fair. And I said, well, Brillo, come on. You have all of that room out there to run and play. And he said, this place is a prison with that fence. And, you know, Mike, that isn't even the one that I started out to tell you. But somehow it's the one that popped into my mind. The one I was going to tell you that is a better example of how animals pick up our words and know when to use them is that Cloudy and Brillo were especially good friends. Cloudy was a mostly poodle whom we brought into our family at about the same time, just actually a few weeks after Brillo came. Brillo was sort of a terrier type. Probably between the two of them, they represent about six breeds, but at any rate, because Cloudy did have a lot of poodle, he tended to yap quite a bit, and that annoyed Brillo. And he would tell me that, you know, that dog barked too much. But at any rate, one day, he just, and he would bark back, of course. But one day, when Cloudy was barking, Brillo just erupted in like a thunderclap, as I mentioned in the book. And I said, Brillo, stop it, please. You're just making Cloudy bark even more. And he said, well, he pisses me off. And I said, Brillo, I can't believe you said that. And he said, well, that's what you and Daddy say all the time. So,
really?
Yes. Now, another thing I'd like to mention is that dogs who live in France learn to speak French because that's what they hear. And say in Germany, they speak German. But telepathic communication has an automatic ingredient, shall I say, that where all thoughts are understood in whatever language it is. That's why we can understand representatives of other civilizations who have their own languages. Although they do study ours, they learn them, just as we learn foreign languages, they study ours. But telepathy does have that automatic translation system in it.
Yes.
And just as we expand our vocabularies, animals do the same thing as they hear the words from us.
Yes, indeed. Now, one thing that did happen that you mentioned in the book with Brillo was that he had a fight with the St. Bernard. What brought that on?
Oh, yes. Brillo, from the day he joined our family, and actually, Brillo was left over from adoption day, way back then in early in 1994. I was very active in our little local no-kill shelter. That I, in fact, was one of the founders of it, and I had much more time then. And he was a leftover from one of the very first adoption days, so I brought him home to foster. And at that time, Bob was erecting a cedar fence along about 60 feet of the yard that faces the road, and he was replacing the wire fence, because we had about a 5-foot wire fence all around 2 of our 5 wooded acres. And to make it look much more attractive, he was putting up a cedar fence. And Brilla was just lying on the deck watching Bob working. And when Bob finished, he just said, "Well, Brilla, what do you think of the fence?" So Brilla bounded across the probably 25 feet, I guess, took a couple of leaps, and he soared over that fence with plenty of space. So, obviously, he could scale a 5-foot fence. Perhaps, probably he would get over a 6-foot too, which made him unadoptable. Because according to bylaws, which are Humane Society bylaws, the chapters have to assure the safety of the dogs that they allow to be adopted. Well, most people even in rural areas have only 4 or 5 foot fences, because those keep in the horses and cattle or sheep, and llamas. We have all of them around here, and goats. But that was not going to keep in Brillo. So we adopted him. And thereafter we thought of that very strange fence, because Bob had to add about 3 feet, as the fence that Brillo built. And that's how he came into our family. But we became so attached to him that this was definitely not a hardship. And from the very first day he was there, he had Alpha Dog written all over him. And he just assumed that position. And the rest of our dogs, because by that time there were probably 4 or 5 others, and none of them objected until Happy, who came along several years later. Happy was a dog that I rescued, a St. Bernard English Mastiff mix. He was only about 70 pounds, but he was a puppy.
Yes.
And his adoption fell through. Well, Bob fell in love with Happy anyway, and named him Happy because, as Bob said to me, "I'm going to name him Happy because that's how he makes me feel." By the time that Happy was full grown, he weighed 220 pounds.
Gosh.
He was huge, and not fat. Mm. He was just a massive chest and powerful. He looked like a lion.
Yeah.
And he would walk through the house, you know, just sort of with the assurance that a male lion walks around. You know?
Yes.
But at any rate, at one point, because of his size, who knows, that was before my telepathic connection opened with animals. But at any rate, he challenged Brillo. He's the only dog. And we've had many males who live together peaceably. But he's the only one who ever challenged Brillo for the alpha positions.
Mm.
And third time he did it, it was really a ferocious babble.
Oh.
And apparently Brillo, they both declared that Brillo won it, because
right.
there were no fights after that. But that was, it was very, very frightening to me. Bob wasn't home, and I didn't know what to do after a while. Well, I got a bucket of water and poured on them, but as I mentioned in the book, that just made an additional mess for me to clean up, because they were so into that that nothing fazed them. And they just kept chasing throughout the house and snarling and biting each other until they were totally exhausted.
Yeah.
And
I must say, Brillo does make me laugh in a way, because he considered himself the boss, so you said he wanted special treatment and decided that perhaps where the others had to walk home, he wanted a ride.
He felt he was the boss from the beginning.
Yeah.
But the thing is, so did the other dogs. And it's not as if he was a dictator-type ruler or alpha. He just had that type of personality of the other dogs respected him.
I love the sort of final life of Brillo when you mentioned that when he went over, they, and I assume you mean the dogs, had a party for
him. Mike, pardon me. I'm getting a lot of static. Are you?
Are you? Only very slight. It's not too bad, my end, I must admit. Did you not hear my question then?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't. Could you speak
up? Don't worry. I'll mention it again. All I was saying is I had to sort of smile at the end of Brillo's life when you mentioned that they, and I assume that means the other dogs, had a party for him.
Mike, I'm sorry. Please repeat that. I'm getting a great deal of static.
Right, okay. You talk for a while then. Can you hear me all right?
I can now, yes, it's better.
Okay, I'll repeat the question then, hoping that the static's gone. It's still regarding Brillo, and I had to smile and thought it was a nice touch at the end of his life when you mentioned that they, which I assume is the other dogs, held a party for him.
Oh, yes. Yes. That was, after, now some of our dogs, we have taken to the doctor. They have asked to have their doctor help them go there. They use the word there in speaking of our spirit world that we call heaven. After he had the shot, Bob and I always take the dogs. We sit on the floor with them. They are grateful for this opportunity, because they know there is no such thing as death. They're multidimensional. So at any rate, right after the veterinarian had given Brillo the shot, I mean, first of all, there's the shot that is just a sedation so that they go to sleep, and then comes the shot that is the lethal one. And right after that, Brillo sent me an image. They all do. And he was absolutely ecstatic. He said, they knew I was coming, and they had a party for me. And he mentioned, he sent me an image, it was a huge crowd. There were, some of our other dogs whom he knew. There were some wild animals. There were children, adults, and a sea of balloons that were just floating in the air. I mean, it was a party like none I've ever seen. And then, because he had become so lame and could barely walk at all in his last month or so, he ran and leaped and just went out of sight. It's because I know what kind of life our beloved animals have in the spirit world that it relieves my grief about them. We miss them. Bob and I miss them just like any other person who loves their animals. We miss them dreadfully. It's like any other member of our family that we were so close to day after day and had such love for. And when suddenly they are not there, we miss them dreadfully. It's a void in our lives. But the grief is much less because we can be happy by knowing their new life.
Right. I'm not sure if Don's just mentioned that we've got a caller on the line. Do we have a caller? No, maybe not.
Okay, Mike, may I ask you to please speak up? Somehow, between the UK and the western edge of the United States, there's some interference on the line.
Okay. Can you hear that all right?
Yes, when you speak louder, I can hear.
Okay, that's all right. I probably spoke a little bit more softly. Yes, I mean, it amuses me in a way that they talk of, as you've mentioned there, as being heaven, if you like, and they talk of the earth as being here. And I think that's quite cute in a way, but I was also surprised that they told you that they have a bigger self, which no doubt is similar to our higher self, and they see it as a big bubble of light.
Yes, summertime. Summertime told me that. Animals do evolve. In fact, summertime, but I learned this only in the last month of summertime's life. Even though I felt an attachment to him from really the very first moment that I came upon him, I felt an attachment. And hundreds of times I thought of him, and I even spoke of him so often or wrote about him as touching my very soul. But it was only a month or so before he died that I realized he is an aspect of my soul. We all are, according to Matthew and some of my other sources, this personage, this experience of who we are, who you are, Mike, in this lifetime,
yes.
Who I am, these are just aspects of experiences of our souls. So our souls are much, much grander and know much, much more than we are consciously aware. And
yeah.
It is the same with animals. They also evolve.
Yeah.
Part of my soul chose to be born as that beautiful Cocker Spaniel summertime, and I guess it chose to be so terribly abused for the 2.5 years of his life before he was just really thrown out, and then a couple found him and kept him for 6 months and then had to give him up.
Right.
And that's when he came into my life.
Right. I'll mention that You've told us in your book that Summertime originally came to you with the name Scrapper. And I found it amusing. I think it was Scrapper, you said, who used to let Molly the rat out of his cage. But tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. No, he didn't let Molly out.
Right.
He couldn't have done that. But Molly is a white rat who just appeared in our home. And we were able to capture her after about a month. And we got a big cage for her and put it on the kitchen table in front of a large window. And Summertime could scramble up on kitchen counters and into the bathroom sinks. And so, of course, he would get up on the table, too. And he was enamored of Molly. She actually trained him from her cage. As long as he would just lie on the table, she was fine. But when he started pawing at her cage, she would just stand up, put up her forelegs, and he would back off. And one day when he was there, Molly went to her door and scratched and wanted to come out. And so, of course, I watched her very carefully. But she got out of her cage and went over near Summertime, and he was absolutely still. He didn't move a muscle. And she played around him until she was tired of it, and then went back to her cage. Now, she did not live in that cage. That was her private space. And Bob also built her a little pegboard room at the top, so she had an even more private space.
Right. But, sort of a five-star hotel there.
Yeah, well, almost. but we would let her be loose in our the room that we used as our computer room and TV room. We'd put her in there and close the door. Because at that time we had three other dogs, and we just couldn't trust the other dogs with you know with Molly, and she was with us for 2 years, and we loved that little soul. She just really endeared herself to Bob and me as well as to Summertime.
Right. I was a little surprised to read, since you mentioned Summertime there, that I think I've got this correct, that she was actually frightened by spirits.
Oh, he was. But that was just at the absolute end of his life. All the dogs know that our home is filled with spirits. They are spirits, human and animal. Sometimes they appear as what people think of as orbs, or not think of, but what people know as orbs. Now, I don't see these, but the dogs do. And I think it was Brillo who mentioned that one time there was a huge golden orb in the bedroom, and that they never make any noise. Sometimes they flicker and move around, and they're different sizes. So all of the animals were accustomed to that, but right near the end, in the last few weeks of Summertime's life, he came running. I was working late, and he was asleep in the bedroom when I came into my office, which I really call my sanctuary because it has so many items in here that are so personal to me that my children and grandchildren and friends have given me or have made for me. But at any rate, I heard him crying as he was running in, and so I got down, and he said, "They're after me! They're after me!" So what happened is that he was frightened. He was almost hysterical. He said there were more spirits than ever before, and they wanted to take him with them. And so I was trying to comfort him and tell him that all the spirits in our home were good. And he said, "But I'm not ready to leave you yet." Yeah. In fact, I kind of think of it, that was about the last week that he was alive. And I just turned off my computer because he was just quivering so much, and I just took him to bed and just held him, and so he slept with me all night long. Well, he slept on our bed anyway, but it was the only way to comfort him because he was so frightened.
Yes. And, very human-like, you might say.
Pardon me?
Very human-like, in a way.
Very human?
Yes. Their reaction to these things.
Yes. It's that there is no separation between us and the animal kingdom, or the rest of the animal kingdom, to be more accurate. They are souls, just as we are, in different bodies, different levels of comprehension. As extensive as their innate abilities are to understand, and in some ways they're way beyond us. They're more energy sensitive than we are. They are straightforward. They cannot lie. It's not in their nature to do that or be deceptive. They are loyal, and they love unconditionally. So in those ways, they are way ahead of us, actually. We develop all sorts of personality traits or characteristics, like tact or diplomacy or what we call white lies. And I'm not saying that's bad, but and some are not nearly as nice as that. But we do develop those nuances in personalities. Animals don't. At any rate, we really are so interconnected always that this, and we're getting back to that. That is one of the aspects of the ascension process, as we are reaching these higher vibratory levels, that the rest of the animals are becoming more peaceable with each other and with humans. In fact, there's probably more evidence of that among animals and between animals and humans than there is evidence between humans. But that is why I wrote the book. To explain why we need to respect and nurture the animal kingdom, the animals who are dependent upon us for their care, for their medical attention, and respect the lives of those animals that we call wild, the predators. At one time, when Earth really was the Garden of Eden, all the animals lived peacefully among themselves and with the earliest civilization. and it was the introduction of dark energy here that created the food chain, the predator and prey. We're moving away from that. We're moving back to to a world where there is peace and harmony among all life in the world.
Yes, that's absolutely wonderful. Now, Susie, it's been so great talking to you. The time is flying by. I'm going to quickly mention to our listeners that your telepathic connection extends to speaking with dolphins, deers, squirrels, lizards, crickets, and even the Devic and plant kingdoms. But what I'd like you to do at the moment is tell our listeners how they can obtain your book.
Yes, thank you. Go to my website, which is matthewbooks.com. Go to the bookshop, scroll all the way to the bottom, and you will see it there, available for both shipping within the U.S. and international shipping. And I am delighted by the response to this book. It seems to resonate with the people who get it, because I've had such very heartwarming emails of feedback about it, and people are buying it as gifts. And people in so many different foreign countries are buying it. That is just obviously this is very fulfilling to me, but in still a higher dimension of myself, it's that the bond between animals and people is not exclusive to one country or another. It has nothing to do with the level of academic education or technological progress. It is soul level.
Right. Susie, I'm going to have to almost stop you there, because I need the last minute to announce next week's guest, who is going to be Sheila Applegate, who's an internationally renowned spiritual seer, healer and teacher, who channels the ascended masters, including Magdalene. And one of her goals is, as a teacher and spiritual reader, to help others understand that they too possess the innate ability and can connect directly with their own guides and spiritual teachers. So that should, again, be a very interesting program. I have to thank you very much, Susie, for coming on to my program. I'm sure you must be an extremely busy person with all the work you're in. Would you like just a final short message for our listeners?
Yes, I would. That animals can inspire us to emulate their unconditional love, and it's that we truly are one family, just as we are a family with our universal family with other civilizations. Our other life forms right here on Earth are a part of the oneness of all too. And Mike, thank you again for this opportunity to be with you again. I love being with you, Mike. I'm just sorry about the static today. And Matthew and I send love and peace to you, Mike, and to all of our audience today.